This is Twit.
I do a lot of reading in my daily life. I also do a lot of signing up for things online, but rarely do I do a lot of reading of terms of services when I sign up for things online because A, apparently I'm kind of lazy, and B, have you seen the terms of service on some of these sites? My eyes, anyways, I don't know about you, Megan, glaze over when I'm confronted with that like large wall of text, pages upon pages worth. And sure, I have myself to blame, but I'm certainly not alone in feeling like sometimes companies know this is going to happen and they slip things in there to capitalize on that. Joining us to talk about the terms of service reckoning, as he calls it, is Nate Langson from Bloomberg Businessweek. Welcome back to the show, Nate.
Thanks very much for having me, guys.
I appreciate getting you on, and I love that you call it the reckoning because that makes it sound so fatal, although I don't know if it actually is, but let's dive into it and see if that's the case. You start off your piece talking a little bit about PayPal and how they're suspending hundreds of accounts, and it kind of points back to the terms of service, kind of an interesting angle. What's going on there exactly?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this story started out actually when I was looking into to this issue with PayPal. I'd sort of heard from a few people here in Europe, millennials, that they had had their accounts closed by PayPal because they were underage at the time that they signed up for the service. They were under 18. Part of the problem is that they're now in their late 20s. And so these closures have been happening about 10 years or so after their accounts initially opened. And they all came about by PayPal asking them for some ID because they were trying to move some, you know, money, legitimate money, you know, out of the account. They needed proof of ID. They noticed, PayPal that is, noticed that they were underage when they signed up a decade ago and said they were going to close the account and what have you. So it was very, very bizarre. But then during the congressional hearings with Mark Zuckerberg the other week, one of the senators had sort of waved this giant stack of papers at Zuckerberg and said, you know, I'm a lawyer and I don't understand this, you know, or words to that effect, sort of talking about the fact that these terms and conditions are just gigantic, full of legalese, no one pays attention to them. And Zuckerberg said that he doesn't think people actually pay attention to these. And when I went back to PayPal, the only thing that they told me is that they close these accounts in order for people to be able to legally accept the terms and conditions. But PayPal's terms and conditions are currently about 60,000 words long. You know, so that's longer than The Great Gatsby. It's twice as long as George Orwell's Animal Farm. You know, it's longer than many very popular novels. And it just made me think that this is a huge issue, but it's also a huge issue just about time before we move into what's called GDPR, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. But it's essentially new regulations in Europe about data protection. But there's a big element of that around user consent, which directly relates to terms and conditions. So I sort of packaged all this up into one piece to sort of really step back and say, wow, you know, this has been having a real effect on people in this new way that we're sort of learning about with PayPal. But more broadly speaking, this is probably not something that's going to be able to happen legally in future for European citizens.
So what's the solution to this problem, though? Because, I mean, you know, we all know we can't have nice things because people do bad things with nice things. So you have to have some sort of, you know, there have to be terms of and conditions. There has to be and they almost have to be that long. It's just the world that we live in. So what's the solution?
Well, I mean, part of the argument is that they don't have to be that long. And really, it comes down to the sort of the classic KISS rule, keep it simple, stupid, you know. It's about making things understandable to the average person. So PayPal may have 60,000 words in its current terms of service. But, you know, the vast majority of that, A, probably isn't relevant to most people. And B, the bits that are relevant are not necessarily that easy to understand. So the idea is that these terms and conditions should be made much more understandable, you know, break them down, make it easy for people to understand. If they need to read into more detail, offer that. No one's saying that these terms and conditions should completely disappear and go away legally. You know, as you say, they need to be there to protect people and to protect businesses. But that sort of that moment that you're giving consent for things like your data to be processed, for example, or for your money to be held by a company, you have to, under GDPR, be able to give informed consent, or rather a company has to show that a user gave informed consent for their data or money or whatever it is to be processed. And it cannot be considered informed if you have to plow through 60,000 words of legalese. So the way that this will have to work is a balance that users will have to be able to generally understand what they're being signed up to or what terms they're being held to when using a service. And a company has to be able to say that they tried their best to make sure it was understood, and then it's okay. And then the terms and conditions can still be lengthy behind that if needs be, but at least they can say, well, a user was informed enough to give their consent for their data to be used.
Yeah, standardizing this in a way that, like in my head, I envision headings and subheadings that are collapsible to give you the broad sense of what this particular part is about. And then if you really want to dive in there and get even more detailed information, you can. But that's a lot to ask and format for all the companies that are doing this. Not to mention companies, probably to at least a certain degree, are okay with the fact that this stuff is confusing, right? Like in doing so, in making it so dense, people might be more inclined to do what they're doing now, which is just to say, well, I want into here and I realize I should probably read through this, but I want in here, so I'm going to do it anyways. And the company could stand to gain a lot from that.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this is that this isn't really a new issue. You know, this has been going on for a very, very long time. There was a very interesting case, which I did include in the piece back in 2005, where a software security company put a line in its terms and conditions that essentially said, if somebody spots this line and tells us about it, you'll win a prize. And someone did 4 months later, and they got $1,000. And it sort of proved that it took thousands of downloads of a piece of software and 4 months for just one person to come forward and say, hey, I read your EULA and I saw this thing about a prize. Can I have it, please? And there's some really weird ones as well. If you Google Amazon Web Services living flesh, put that actual term in. It sounds weird. But there's one of the terms of service in AWS for a specific bit of the software that you can use there actually has a clause in it that references how I think it's something like the software can't be used for certain things in the instance that there's an apocalypse and the dead rise up and try and consume living human flesh or something like that. I'm not kidding. It's in there if you Google it. It's been widely covered and actually got cut out of my feature. But, this has just been going on for a very long time. And it's kind of got to a bit of a crunch now with GDPR. But I've got off on a bit of a tangent, but what I was going to say is that...
I like this tangent, by the way, because I was very unclear.
Living flesh will do that to you.
it's easy to go on a tangent with zombies. But there was one kind of an analyst, an expert in legal proceedings that I spoke to around this. And I sort of asked him, like, what's a really good solution? You know, what can a company do in order to try and say, look, we did our best. We've got to have these terms, but we tried to give people informed consent. And one of the ideas, he said, is that you could sort of walk people through an initial set of terms and they have to understand each bit. You know, do you understand this? Do you understand this? Do you understand this? You know, kind of like one of those capture things. And you say, yes, yes, yes. And then you can sort of say, well, you gave informed consent. They tried their best. Problem to that, obviously, is that that's a major roadblock if you're trying to encourage quick signups and conversions. So there's going to be this balanced middle ground where companies don't want to put up a giant roadblock like a huge registration form or giant sets of terms and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, they have to be able to show that they did their best to clearly explain, what data is going to be used for in order for someone to give their consent. Hmm.
So informed consent is it what's at issue here? And there's a difference between terms and conditions and a privacy policy, and sometimes we confuse them. But a privacy policy is you're not giving informed consent to that. Like we just say, like make sure you read the privacy policy. But then if you find out something in it and you want to bring a case against them for that, if it's not part of the terms and conditions that you've signed. So is that one way of getting around this, just putting these things in the privacy policy so that we are informed but not giving our consent?
Well, there's a yes answer and a no answer to that. And part of the problem is that GDPR isn't enforced yet, and companies so far have sort of been reluctant to show their hand up until as recently as this week to say we are GDPR compliant and we've updated our terms and all this sort of thing. So we haven't yet really seen loads of examples of how companies are going to get around this. But the bottom line is that, you know, the difference between informed consent and consent is that, you know, it's very simple. You the idea of a pre-ticked checkbox to say you've read something or agreed to something just cannot happen anymore, you know, because, you know, that is sort of an assumption that you've given consent. You can blindly click something and not realize you've agreed to something. That will just have to go away. You know, that just won't do. Things have to be clearer. You can't have, you know, pre-tick checkboxes and things like that. And it's going to have to be much, much more easy to understand up front before you agree to give any of your data away.
Yeah, maybe I realize you were talking about, you know, these barriers that potentially prohibit someone from wanting to sign up, but maybe you quiz them. Wouldn't that be fun? You go to a site, you read the terms of service, you can't get in here until you take a quiz and tell us. No, that wouldn't be fun at all. What doesn't make me feel very good about the possibilities that surround this is the correlation to what we already experience with permissions on smartphones, right? Like, we're constantly in this state of not truly understanding exactly what apps have access to, even though we've explicitly said, yes, you can have access to my camera. Yes, you can have access to the contacts. And that's a much simpler, I feel like, kind of delivery of what we're saying okay to. You know, the permissions when we install an app is kind of already doing what we're talking about here. It's got a header that says contacts, and then there's a little bit more information about it, but it's still very obscure, and yet we still say okay, even though something like, you know, Cambridge Analytica or who knows what else happens. So it doesn't really give me a whole lot of positive thoughts of as far as the possibilities here. What do you think?
Yeah,
about that?
That's definitely true. I mean, you know, one of the big differences between that and you know, what's happening with GDPR is that with the permissions on a device, you know, accessing your camera, you know, it's fairly simple. You know what you're getting. You know, it does, as we old term in Britain, it does what it says on the tin. You know, we know that, okay, you're accessing my camera because you need to take pictures, or you need my contacts because this is a social app. That's fine. But with services and with networks and with financial companies, there's so much more that they can do with your information, your data. You know, who's it being shared with? What companies is it being shared with? Do you have a right to revoke those permissions? Where's the data being stored? You know, all of this stuff is what's made possible under GDPR for somebody to get access to. You know, they will have a maximum of 30 days to respond to a request giving you information about where your data is stored, literally, you know, the location, the country that it's in, what companies have access to it, what companies have had access to it, in addition to obviously all the data itself. And then you can request to have the whole lot wiped completely. And if they don't comply with this, or other failures to comply with this, are punishable by up to 4% of your global sales, you know, which is just a gigantic amount of money. You know, you think about how much that is for the likes of Google and Facebook, and it's why they have hundreds, probably thousands of people working on this now. You know, there's kind of no wiggle room here. They've got to get it right.
So what responsibility lies with the company itself? Using your PayPal example, the woman who is 26 now signed up to use the service when she was 16. They didn't check that. They didn't prove that then. So how much of this lies in the companies itself to enforce those types of terms of service and not wait a decade to enforce them?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, in the PayPal example, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, crazy harsh on them, because at the end of the day, what they were doing was essentially totally in their rights. You know, it was a user who signed up underage. The terms did say that they couldn't sign up before they were 18, and yet they did. And so PayPal shut down the account. You know, what was kind of maddening for these people is that it was 10 years later, and they'd obviously given PayPal a lot of fees and things in the meantime. But it kind of means that that companies will still be able to act on breaches of terms and conditions. You know, it will be separate from that age gate sort of policy. Like, they don't have to necessarily say, we have to put in these age checks or some kind of identification procedure in order to make sure that you're complying with the terms. They just have to make sure that they've made it clear at the point you sign up what those rules are. After that, you know, if you break those rules, if you break your side of those of that agreement, then, you know, the same process can happen. The only real difference is that a user will have a better defense to say, well, look, this is 60,000 words of legalese. You know, how was I supposed to read this and understand this? How could I give informed consent? You know, I was just giving consent, but it wasn't informed, because how can I understand all this? that's kind of the key difference here. So it'll be separate from age checks. It'll be separate from a lot of stuff, but it's just going to have to be very, very clear to a user what they're agreeing to. Yeah. They can still break it.
Yeah, absolutely. Nate Langston with Bloomberg, really appreciate you taking time, especially out of your late evening, to join us on the show today. Where do you want people to follow all this stuff you're doing online?
Yeah, well, I mean, Twitter is the best place, at Nate Langston, NateLanxon. I post links to all my stuff that I write for Bloomberg and for my own podcast there as well. And I've just posted a link to that feature in case anyone wants to check the link and read that.
Awesome. Nate, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thank
you very much.
Thanks, Nate.
All right, take care, Nate.